We have a special guest co-host joining us here today from the Now and Then show, my good friend Jim Meehan. How you doing, Jim?
Tim, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you, too. It's been quite some time. We used to do a lot of shows together and have a lot of special guests on the show. So
many years
it's
ago.
It's good to have kind of like this reunion, mini reunion here today, because we also have another very special guest. He's a Philadelphia radio broadcast pioneer. He's an actor. He's a recording artist. He's done print. He's done newspaper. He's done television. He's done film. And we're very excited to have him here today as our very special guest. We're going to welcome the legendary Michael Tierson to the R&B Showcase.
It's so good to see you two guys after so long. You did mention performer, didn't you?
I didn't, but I'm going to let you tell us about it. You did so many things, man. Performer.
Yeah, I was a performer before I was on radio. I was a solo folk singer in Baltimore.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In my high school years. Mm-hmm. Two people came out of that circuit that kind of validated it for me. Greg Kinn was one.
Oh, yeah. Remember that.
And as I got home from my freshman year of college in May of 1967, the first Sunday I went to the open stage at the coffee house, Patches 15 Below, and one of their regulars had brought in a girl singer from D.C. to audition. They asked me if I minded if she'd go on right before me. I said, no problem. Mm-hmm. I got on and nobody saw or heard me because they were completely in shock and awe from this 19-year-old Emmy Lou Harris.
Mm. No kidding. Wow.
I had two thoughts. One, I need to be friends with this woman yesterday. And two, I got to start thinking about Plan B, which became radio.
Okay.
That worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
Well, you have such a history in radio. Such an iconic voice. I mean, you know Michael Tierson when you hear him. You're so unique, so creative, so talented.
That's why I could never get commercials. Yeah, I did my first show in late October of 67 on WXPN AM, the dorms only part of their operation.
Okay.
And it was the first album rock show ever done on WXPN. Mm-hmm. So by January, they had started stuff on the FM on Saturday and Sunday mornings. My first show was called Beef Power. It was named for Captain Beefheart. So I was looking back, my motto in retrospect is what box, what curve, what envelope. You know, when the greatest thing can happen to an artist is to work in a brand new form that has no history and no rules, so you can completely do whatever makes it work.
Right.
And Jerry Stevens at MMR, when I finally got to there, was wonderful. He was always talking about theater of the mind as opposed to theater of the mindless, which radio has turned into. And I look at radio now as an oral curtain that just hangs in the air, desperately trying not to engage the listener. And in the early days of MMR, we engaged like crazy. Mm-hmm. I still do in the 3 weekly webcasts that I do free and on demand on iradiophilly.com. There's 2 weekly that air twice on the weekend, and then they're available Monday to Monday. And radiothatdoesntsuck.com, which I put up the story about how I got bounced from WBCC, and I was instantly invited for this and spoke to the cat who runs it in Toronto, Todd Miller, and it felt like home, and it's still home to me.
Is that pretty much open, Michael? They could play whatever you want on it?
Yeah. I mean, I look at, people think of freeform radio as just putting random stuff together, this with that. And that's a pretty narrow definition.
Okay.
I have a much broader and more useful definition of the hour of the show. And the iRadio Philly shows are 60 minutes. The ones on iRadio Philly, I'm freed from the tyranny of the 60-minute hour, and they can go up to about 78 minutes. I want them to fit on one CD. Mm-hmm. And I figured that is a blank canvas, and I'm free to create the form for a show with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and do that. I can do any form of music that I want to do, and essentially you'll hear virtually anything except opera and hip hop. I'm just not a hip hop person.
Yeah.
For me, music requires melody. Mm-hmm. And when it's all spoken, there's no melody.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Now, talking about stations, Michael, you mentioned WXPN. Is that your first station that you started at?
Yes.
Okay.
I was a student at Penn. It was all undergraduates then.
Okay.
Undergraduates, mm-hmm. not even graduate mm-hmm. students. Mm-hmm. And in the spring of 69,
okay.
the station had so much momentum mm-hmm. that we had decided that we didn't want to sign off for the summer as the station had always done up until that time. Mm-hmm. And on a Tuesday, Michael Cascuna, who's gone on to be a very prominent jazz record producer, and he's also done people like Chris Smither and Bonnie Raitt and Martin Mull, suggested we do a listener support marathon.
Okay.
Go to the listeners for the money to stay on over the summer since we weren't getting it from the college.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a blazing success. I found out decades later that was the first college radio station listener support marathon anyone did, wow. any place.
Mm-hmm.
So we were making history. And the best part of it was we didn't know we were making history.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be pure. Mm-hmm. We could really be pure about it. And I decided by that Tuesday, after it started on Friday, that I think I saw a big future in album rock radio, that it was going to get very big, since it was something that was completely filling a hole that was not on the air before. In the dorm rooms, we were turning people onto the albums we liked and sharing music like that. So why couldn't you do that on radio? Top 40 radio wasn't doing it, although it was really at its best in about 1966 to 68.
Mm-hmm.
When you could get nearly anything to be a top 40 hit. But this was what we were doing ourselves, so why not do it on radio?
Get Together, a nice mellow rock tune with a message from the Young Bloods. The year was 1967. Out of the album entitled Young Bloods, it was reissued as a single in 1969, went all the way to number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100. And we're getting together with friends here today in the studio. My special guest is co-host Jim Meehan from the Now and Then Show, and we have Philadelphia radio legend, you'll know his iconic voice. I'm talking about Mr. Michael Tiersen, who is joining us and sharing some insight on the origin of album rock radio. You mentioned you were working at the University of Penn's radio station at the time, and they were going through a transition. So tell us what happened next.
They put on Saturday morning, okay. Saturday and Sunday, called it Phase 2
mm-hmm.
on WXPN, 88.9 then.
Okay. Well, we had that station.
Yeah, we did.
Yes.
Later, right.
Yeah. After XPN, mm-hmm. after they nearly lost their license, they moved out the undergraduates from the FM
mm-hmm.
and basically turned it into a professional station. And I was back there from 92 to 95
mm-hmm.
after WMMR, where I spent 70 until the end of 76, when I was fired for chopping a door down with an axe.
Oh, boy.
And back again in 78 to put together the special weekends all summer for the 10th anniversary of the station.
Okay.
And that's how Jerry Stevens got me back on the air. He told the general manager Jerry told me, he said, you can do anything, just not hire Michael. Because he thought I was crazy. Actually, I had permission to chop down that door. I got it specifically from him because I'd had to bust in the door one night. I'd been demoted from 10 to 2 to overnights, and they left the commercial logs for the overnights and morning drive in an office, and I knew exactly where they were. So I called up the guy, and I said, I'm going to have to bust in your damn door.
Mm.
And he said,
Rebel Jock,
take out the vent grill.
Mm.
So I lied down on the floor, and I lined my foot up, pulled it back, and wham!
Mm.
I was a little high and to the left. It went through the door, and it felt great.
Mm.
Second one, I kept my eye on it and hit it dead center and splattered little pieces of the slats in 180 degrees around the room, reached under, got the logs, saved the station probably several $1,000s of commercials that would have been missed, and my ultimate reward was getting fired.
Mm. Now, I want to kind of get the history of when those stations were. You were XPN, then you were an MMR.
Or I was at DAS-FM in between right. for January okay. to June of 1970.
Right. Okay.
Then I became music director at MMR mm-hmm. based on Michael Cascuna's recommendation. He had taken over the Dave Herman spot when Dave Herman went to New York. And Michael, that September, went to New York, and then I inherited the late night spot. And I remember the first song I played There had been a song that I came out of. I introduced myself and I said the Marconi experiment, which is the name Dave Herman used, is over. Mm. It was a success. Mm-hmm. Now we're playing for real. And I went into Boz Scaggs' song, I'll Be Long Gone, with the main line, I'm going to get up and make my light shine.
Tim Marshall on the R&B Showcase, giving you some history on Philadelphia radio with guest co-host Jim Meehan from the Now and Then Show and Philadelphia radio legend Michael Tierson. Name of the track is I'll Be Long Gone from Boz Scaggs. And Michael, that was one of your theme songs, right?
I had signed off of WXPN with that twice, actually, because there was one night when I was doing overnights on WXPN, I stopped off and on DAS-FM, that I stopped in on XPN, and the morning person didn't show up, so I did the show. I called it Pajamas Party, and I called myself Pajama. And I felt like, you know, I couldn't be on two stations with the same name. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to beg that trouble.
So you went, what's two stations, XPN and DAS at the same time?
No, I was on XPN, then DAS, then MMR.
Okay.
Then I was fired there in the end of 76, mm-hmm. brought back in 78 until 92.
Wow.
Long when long. I was basically cut loose as a money-saving device. Mm. At that time, John DiBella in the morning was making my annual salary every 3.5 weeks. Mm. And my little salary was, I was the one that came up with the contract ending at the right time for them. Didn't help me much, but it let me focus on my wife's cancer from that point completely. And I didn't think I'd be back to do radio, but XPN brought me back in to do late nights. And they gave me their programmed stuff, except for the last hour. And let me call that the attic, which I had used in 1969 and 68 into the beginning of 70 there. Mm-hmm. And let me do what I wanted to. And I got to do some really creative stuff. And there were some people that were never real comfortable with me being there. For instance, there was a Lyle Lovett song that got banned. Because of the line, the Jap girl stole my car and took my clothes, and it was banned for the phrase Jap girl.
Oh, wow.
But Randy Newman's song, Rednecks, that you could play. So I asked, what are the parameters? Mm. I mean, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So after I had my talk with them, I played them together on my show.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were at WDAS-FM, was that when Hylett was there?
Yes,
at that time?
And Harvey Holiday.
Harvey Holiday, yes. Tell us about the experience with DAS.
Well, I didn't see much of those people because my first 2 weeks, they still had someone in the overnight that was going to leave in 2 weeks. So they had me do the one shift that even fewer people listened to then, morning drive.
Wow.
I am the worst morning drive person of all time. Mm-hmm. I am not a morning person. And then they moved me to the overnights, and I was following my father's son, Steve Leon, who passed away several years ago.
Okay.
Son of Max Leon, the owner of the station.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the really radical political radio that DAS was known for.
Okay.
I didn't really do the politics so overtly as him, but a lot of that was contained inside the music.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I got to MMR and did the late nights, I always figured that my hidden agenda was the way I would try to communicate that it's a bad idea to just accept what you're being spoon-fed, and that a healthy dose of skepticism is a real good survival mode. Mm-hmm. So I was basically promoting that as a philosophy and playing anything that I could feel like playing, anywhere from old traditional 20s vintage country and blues music to some jazz, some classical music, spoken stuff like Ken Nordine's Word Jazz and Lord Buckley, who were two of the main influences on how I do radio.
Okay.
I can remember on DAS-FM, the underground stop, they used to say, you're listening to the underground radio or something like that.
Yeah, well, they used the term underground, so MMR didn't.
Yeah. But they were on before MMR as far as...
No, they started the exact same day.
Oh, I did.
Really?
I
You're kidding.
I think it was April 27th of 68. And I had already been on XPN doing album rock for 6 months at that time.
Now, when did they become an urban station? They were kind of a rock station then, or underground, you mentioned.
They were.
Yeah, yes. When did they become urban, though?
When MMR went full time.
Okay.
And ate them up for ratings.
Okay.
They decided that they could take the concept and turn it into a black album station.
Okay.
The first in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it a very compatible companion to their AM station.
Okay. DAS AM. Yeah.
Which was a huge successful black top 40.
Absolutely.
At the time.
Georgie Woods and
Butterball.
Butterball. Yes.
And the engineers never really appreciated us there. I had, when I was doing the mornings, I at 10 a.m. went directly into an album of an hour of classical music hosted by Max Leon.
Okay.
And I remember one day I dead rolled a song to 10 o'clock straight up, and they still cut me into it 20 seconds early to go into the other show. So it just told me that they weren't listening and didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I do tend to remember that on that station, that you would, there would be classical, there'd be a little comedy maybe, there would be, of course, all the new stuff coming out at the time, and then, yeah, I remember switching over to MMR. Yeah,
yeah, I really think that MMR was, without the overt politics of it, with Steve Leon and Ron Sockel, and Ed Shockey was there too. My first time working with Ed, who took over music director at MMR when I was given the late night show, much to David Dye's dismay because he thought he had earned that slot. As it turned out, I was a much better choice than he ever would have been because I had a much grander vision for what you could do with album rock radio.
Yeah.
Now, were you a program director at some point at MMR?
Nope. I've never been a program director. I never wanted to be the boss. There's a B.B. King song called Paying the Cost to Be the Boss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know any more than the title for that to be a favorite song.
Talking about paying the cost to be the boss. That's B.B. King, the King of the Blues with Tim Marshall and guest co-hosts Jim Meehan from the Now and Then Show and Philadelphia radio broadcast pioneer Michael Tiersen. And now, Michael, in addition to radio, you're also a musician. Tell us about it.
I'm a performer in my heart. It's what I do. I've been a folk singer. I'm doing that again as a duo called Co-Conspirators, Michael Tiersen and Bill Ferguson, who plays mandolin.
Okay.
And just the Tuesday before we are recording this, we were the opening act at one of the free outdoor shows in Proprietors Park in Gloucester City, a series that I helped found with Gloucester City resident Jimmy Waters, who I call the concierge of Gloucester City. And what we've done there has reinvigorated the park, so there's lots more events. They finally, after 2 years of using a generator to power the sound and the lights, put electricity to the gazebo stage, and it made it much easier to do events and to do lots more with it. And it's worked beautifully for Gloucester City.
It's great. That's great.
And I also host the series in the Dell in Haddon Heights, which I've done for about 18 years now.
I wanted to just jump to a different subject. You've said you've been in a couple movies. How many movies? We were talking a little earlier.
Between movies and TV shows, I acted mostly extra work in about 50. The first credited speaking part was in Blowout with John Travolta and Nancy Allen, Brian De Palma film. One of the three De Palma films I've been in, along with the one in Atlantic City. I'm blanking the name.
Burt Lancaster?
No, it was not that one. It was the one with Danny DeVito and Joe Piscopo and Captain Lou Albano.
Oh, wow.
And
how did you get involved in all that?
Yeah.
Well, once I did a TV commercial for MMR, I got into SAG the last day before the initiation fee went from $300 to $500. At the 50% off after rate for $150, which was one of the best 150s I've ever spent. I've earned that many times over. And I got the speaking part in Blowout, and I still get residuals on that.
No kidding, really?
And the third one was Dressed to Kill.
Oh, wow, you
were
that too?
The scene I'm in that, Nancy Allen, who is just come from Michael Caine's psychiatrist's office in a taxi to the Museum of Art. The first interior shot, they did the art museum interiors in Philadelphia and the rest of it in New York City.
Okay.
They showed her going up the stairs wearing a white dress, and she wound up playing cat and mouse as she was looking around with the guy whose apartment then she went to and had sex, and he had turned out to have had a vicious sexually transmitted disease. Coming down the steps was me, wearing a horizontally striped three-quarter length shirt that my first wife made for me back in the 70s. And this was, about 20-some years later. I still had it, and it still fit. And I was congratulating myself for having just gotten the phone number of a cute chick, because when I'd be an extra in a movie, I always gave myself a backstory so I knew where he had been, what he was doing, and what was in his head. It makes the experience and the performance much more valid and much better on screen. It serves the big picture much better.
Now, I heard you mention Captain Lou Albano, Michael.
That
leads me to my next question about how you came to write for The Enquirer, which you're as Michael.
Daily News.
Daily News. Michael Mad Dog Tierson?
Right.
Okay. Tell us about that experience.
Well, in the 80s, through MMR, I wound up becoming one of the licensed State Athletic Commission ring announcers. So I did a lot of WWF at the Spectrum and WCW, the TBS stuff,
right.
At the Civic Center.
Okay.
And that was really cool. My favorite thing was the night that I got to do a skit with Rowdy Roddy Piper, rest his soul.
Wow.
He was really sweet. He was a wonderfully sweet guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been meaning to get around to watching his film, They Live Again.
Right.
Wonderful movie. So right as WrestleMania was going to be at the brand new, what is now the Wells Fargo Center, it was several banks' names earlier. Jonathan Takeoff, who was with me at MMR in the early 70s and went on to be at the Drummer and then for decades at the Daily News, called me up and said that they were thinking of adding a wrestling column to the Daily News. He thought that I was the local person who could write it. And I said I wanted it on two conditions. One, I get to treat the game and the fans and the performers with respect. And second, to include the local independent shows, at least to list them, so that people can know about them to go to them. So we became the hottest independent market for a couple of years. It lasted for about 4 years, and I wound up becoming a manager out of that and various things around the ring. I've gotten two of my 14 adult concussions in and around the professional wrestling ring.
You're a wrestling manager.
I was a manager. I wore a freight blue wig. I was managing the Blue Meanie, who had been in ECW. And that was really fun. I also got to be a referee for 55 matches or so, mostly singles. I was never any good at tag teams because you have to be willfully stupid. You have to be really dumb.
Is there any videotapes of these matches still available? I'd love to see that.
Don't think so.
Okay. Were they house shows or did they do any television with those?
I don't think these were televised at all. I think they were house shows.
Okay.
And Ring of Honor started during my run as the columnist.
Mm-hmm.
And that still exists today as part of AEW on TNT. And they just do the occasional pay-per-views of their own. And, that was a great experience. I've gotten to do pretty much nearly everything on my bucket list except to play a perpetrator in a film.
Mm.
I nearly got to be a perp in two different episodes of Homicide.
Okay.
But I didn't get the final call.
Now you were on radio, you were on film and television, right?
Yeah, there's a few TV shows that I appeared on.
Okay.
Hack, which was shot in Philly for 2 years.
Okay.
And that was always just something minor. My key thing was always radio first.
Mm-hmm.
And in latter days, after Robert Hazard died, I became a performer again. And I just love playing live and singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I recorded an album in 2011 called Stuff That Works.
Okay.
and which you can get all the tracks on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, for the 50-year anniversary of the title event, I did an EP called Ruby's Greatest Hit, who was Lee Harvey Oswald, of course. Mm-hmm. So for the 50-year anniversary of the Kennedy assassination and the assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald, I did the EP featuring a song from the album about Jack Ruby, a bio in 12 verses and 4 choruses. Mm. And we redid it also acoustically for that because my colleague at the time, Tom Hampton, challenged me to do an acoustic version, and we knocked it out in 2 hours. 6-minute song, 2 hours from start to finish. He added a little bit of vocal and second guitar afterwards.
Awesome. That's pretty cool. Mm.
Yeah.
You've always been the advocate for independent artists, though, Michael. Like,
yep.
Tell us about some of the artists that you broke in Philadelphia radio. Some of the names of the people that you made their records.
Well, at WMMR, mm-hmm. we were credited, three of the artists that I would consider that we broke largely mm-hmm. were Yes, Procol Harum, Bruce Springsteen. Okay. You can add Steel Eye Span to that mm-hmm. as another one that I particularly did. I was the first one to play Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey on the radio.
No mm. kidding, yeah.
It was a Friday night, and he was at the Main Point as a showcase opener for the weekend. And Luke O'Reilly, who passed away about 2 or 3 years ago, was on ahead of me. He didn't get around to it. And I went in the other room and I took a listen and my jaw dropped. I got it immediately and played most of it that night. John Takei followed me and did most of the album again. And that was the beginning of Bruce Springsteen on MMR. Mm-hmm. And Chris Squire of Yes actually credited Michael Tiersen, not Ed Shockey, with breaking Yes.
Wow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you've also done satellite radio, right?
I was on Sirius beginning in about 2002 till 2007, doing the Bob Dylan Radio Hour.
Okay.
Which I did at home and sent to them on CDs until they finally got me a link after the merger. I'd also gotten put on classic vinyl, which was really kind of boring, the same songs over and over again. So for a game, Keith Olbermann was on MSNBC at the time, and he would always salute a couple birthdays. I would try to match the birthdays he was going to do that night mm-hmm. in my show, and I hit him as often as not, and sometimes multiples. And then after the merger, I was moved to Deep Tracks, which fits me better than anybody. I was one of the first people to do album rock, and Deep Tracks was great. I was told, take what we give you and make it better. And in 2015, when that was changed to Play It As It Lays, and the pay hadn't changed in 12 years, I figured it was time to walk. Mm-hmm. I was old enough for Social Security and a union pension from the MMR years.
Mm.
So what are you doing now as far as music? Bluegrass?
No, I play whatever songs we like to play. There's some bluegrass in there. Mm-hmm. The one I did with the bluegrass band who was headlining on Tuesday night was I Don't Believe You've Met My Baby, a 56 vintage Leuven Brothers song, mm-hmm. which is an amazing song. Okay. It's all a dream sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But play the songs that talk to me, so there's a lot of autobiography in that, and there is in the shows too. I will not write memoirs.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Boring. Mm. Vetting my own past is the most boring thing I can imagine doing. Mm.
But we like hearing about it, Michael. William, you have such a history, man. I mean,
yeah, I'd rather do it there in the form that I like best. And besides, writing about myself seems so narcissistic.
Well, you're a Philadelphia radio broadcast pioneer now, Mike. Tell us about that experience, getting that award from the Broadcast Pioneers Hall of Fame.
Well, it was kind of overdue at the time. The 2 years previous, they had inducted into their Hall of Fame first John DiBella and Pierre Robert, after I had advised them before that if they had inducted either of them, I was likely to leave, since I was on a decade plus on MMR before mm-hmm. Pierre got there,
mm-hmm.
and a dozen years before he started his daytime show. And it worked out.
Well, congratulations on that award. Yes, man, you are definitely a pioneer.
I do have one pioneer. Thing that I really, really want. I want a spot on the Broad Street Walk of Fame. I think
you
I've
should have
it.
I'm
that.
Surprised you don't have one there.
Okay. Yeah, I'm surprised
you
too.
You should have one there. Yes.
The listeners always got me better than management,
right?
Because I was the most free-spirited person mm-hmm. on radio. And I would always go deeper and further than anyone else.
We listen to you all the time, 10 to 2, WMMR, and also was it a Sunday psychedelic Sunday supper?
Psychedelic Sunday supper, right, with a P on Sunday as well as psychedelic.
Right.
And I've since reused that name as a psychedelic snack on WBZC, and I still do occasional psychedelic snack shows on the various websites that I do.
That's where we all met, WBZC-FM, myself and Jim Meehan.
Yes,
it's kind of like a reunion here today. It's good to have you both here with us on the show.
Yeah, that was a really fun place to be at the time.
It was great to have
you. And I was also on MGK doing the part-time work at the time.
Right.
There were times when I would fill in on the Bluegrass Show 10 to 2 Saturday and scramble to MGK to be there on the air at 3 o'clock.
Right. Wow.
And it was just about an hour's drive.
Right. So, well, we definitely appreciate you being here today. And
thanks for sharing this
history, man. It's good to see you after some, you know, been some time. I didn't realize it was as long as it was. But
it is good to see you.
It just scratched the surface. There's a lot of stories.
No, you got a lot to tell, man.
We'll do another time.
We definitely will. You know, we'll have you back and have a big reunion, have everybody here. That'd be great.
That would be wonderful.
That would be fun. See everybody. Fun, yeah. So.
But again, I want to thank you, Michael Tierson, broadcast pioneer, legend, and radio host, and film, and television, and print. And we appreciate you being part of the show today.
And musical performer.
Not forget, what's the name of your CD, Michael? Give us the name of the CD.
Stuff That Works.
Now, if people want to get a hold of your CD or find out where you're performing at.
The best thing to do is to email me, mtierson at Verizon.net. I've still got about 100 copies. I took it off of hard sales the place where the site that the
iTunes
local
and stuff.
That seeded that the local disc manufacturer had.
Okay.
They stopped selling stuff, and I took it off of iTunes because the pay to the artists was pathetic.
Right. It's been a problem. Yeah.
So, hey, you can hear the album.
Stream it, download it.
Make it still stream down. It. You can get all the tracks, but not in the right order.
Okay.
On Yahoo, on YouTube.
Okay.
And there's some live performances of me there, too.
We'll definitely look forward to it. And thank you again, Michael Tierson, for being part of the show here today.
Oh, it's an honor. A pleasure.
Jim Meehan, also good to see you here again. Thank you for coming
here,
in
Tim,
to co-host the show. And hopefully we'll do it again soon.
You feel
right at home, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Well, it's like talking with friends because I'm talking with friends.
Yes, talking with friends, man. Good to see both of you. And thank you.
Thanks for having us, Tim.
And I thank you for joining us for the R&B Showcase. Again, I thank my special guest co-host, Jim Meehan, and very special guest broadcast pioneer, Mr. Michael Tierson, being part of the show here today. I'm Tim Marshall for R&B Showcase.